This broadcast of the PJC Media Network seeks to present wholesome, thought-provoking, and entertaining content. However, the views expressed by the hosts of PJC Media are theirs and theirs alone. They do not reflect the views of this network or its affiliates. Please utilize listener discretion.
In the words of Tina Turner, our heart can be broken. And that's coming up next, right here on The Parker J. Cole Show. Of the Parker J. Cole Show. I'm so glad you are here with me today. We're continuing our discussion about love, and we're basing our discussion off the famous Tina Turner song, What's Love Got to Do With It? Last week, we talked about love and that it's a secondhand emotion, or whether or not that's true, that it is a secondhand emotion. We got some really great responses from you, our listeners and supporters of the show. And so this week, we're going to take the second part of the song where she says, our heart can be broken. And we're going to be talking about how that applies to our topic of love and hopefully give you some more insights into this. So this show is pre-recorded today. And so we won't be taking any live questions, but we do have your responses from last week and this week throughout the week. And we'll have Steve Menking from the Amateur Society responding to them. So just go ahead and take a break. We're going to take a break in just a few moments, and we'll be back after these messages.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
Hi, friends. I'm Dr. Mike Spaulding, inviting you to listen to great Bible teaching on the Transforming Word radio show and podcast. All shows are available on iTunes and Stitcher. Search for the Transforming Word and subscribe for notification of new shows. You may also listen to every episode from my website, www.thetransformingword.com. In addition to the Transforming Word, I want to make you aware of my interview, news, and opinion show, Soaring Eagle Radio. If you're interested in engaging conversations related to a variety of topics not covered by typical news media, then check out Soaring Eagle Radio. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher, and you may listen to every episode on my website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. For more information on my ministries, please email me, Pastor Mike at cclohio.com. Again, that's Pastor Mike at cclohio.com. Thank you for listening to these shows, and please leave me a note when you do. God bless you today.
Hi, and welcome back to our show. You're listening to The Parker J. Cole Show on WPJC 104.5. I'm always so glad to say that because we have come a long way from when we first started this network, and I'm so glad you have been with me the entire time. You know, as I said before the break, we are continuing our discussion about love based off the song from Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It? And we all are familiar with the song. We're even familiar with her side of the story when it comes to the abuse and neglect that she experienced from her husband, who was an abusive partner to her. And so when she sings this song at the end, you, as the viewer of that particular movie, as portrayed by Angela Bassett, you are actually rooting for her. And you understand a little bit of when she says, what's love got to do with it? But this week, we're going to go into another aspect of the song that I think is quite important for us to delve into. And that part of the song is, our heart can be broken. And that is the second part of our talk, where she says, love is a secondhand emotion. But then she makes the comment, a heart can be broken. And so, Steve, what I want to do as we continue our discussion from last week, and once again, thank you for being with us. But as we continue our discussion last week, I want to share a couple of comments that we did not have an opportunity to get to last week that I wanted you to either listen to or just respond to. So I was going to read a couple of these. The first comment is actually not even anything that you have to that you have to really respond to. It's just a joke from one of the listeners. And this is Dave from Texas. And he quips, I did not have secondhand emotions with that woman. And he quotes Bill Clinton. So, Dave, thank you so much for your humor there. So what do you think about that, Steve, as Dave quips to us about that?
Well, it's a interesting sort of perspective and development, obviously, because love is one of those things that spans the entire spectrum from highs to lows. And so a little bit of humor thrown in there is an appropriate sort of balancing act.
Yeah, I love it. That Dave has actually very dry wit, and love that. Appreciate that, Dave. Jeremy from Dothan, Alabama says, I'd echo, and he mentions Elaine from last week, sentiment and build on it. She's simply saying that her love is reciprocal, but that the idea of love itself is reciprocal. It's borrowed, hence the secondhand quality. It's self-serving, interdependent. Jack only loves Jill when Jill loves Jack back, or when Jill deserves Jack's love, not in the absence of Jill's love or her worthiness. In short, it denies agape by reducing love down to an act or a feeling, an emotion that serves the actor-feeler, rather than a decision that elevates the object of love at the expense of the actor feeler. Jeremy, thank you so much for your comment. Go ahead and give your thoughts about that, Steve.
Yeah, well, that's very well put. And I think this identification of the reciprocal nature of love is critically important, particularly as human relationships themselves, the questions get raised about what are proper human relationships. And in the 21st century, what we're seeing is a departure away from norms. And this applies to technology, culture, society, and in general, the key thing to point out here is the presence of a trend where men are moving away from traditional relationships with women, and in many cases choosing to forego them altogether. And you end up in a situation where there is still this desire for attachment, this really deep-seated and deep-rooted feeling, ultimately. And we do know that the heart and the cardiac system, now scientists are coming to the conclusion that there are neurons, essentially there's a brain in your heart, so to speak. And so your heart feels things in an intensely intimate and powerful fashion. And so there's still this desire for reciprocal attention and love. And so when people are going in different directions, whether it regards to technology or culture, I mean, they're situations now where people are talking about robotic companionship as opposed to human relationships. And so ultimately we do need this reciprocal nature in order for us to feel like the true attachments have been established. I mean, love is something that is capable of transcendence, and it's ultimately one of the divine properties of God. And so love is supernatural in addition to just sort of a normal feeling. And so there's all sorts of different connotations there, but that connection one to another, that reciprocal nature is something that I would agree with the commentator. It's something that is absolutely pivotal to our understanding of love itself.
We do got two more comments before we continue our discussion. Sheila from Detroit, when we were talking about, you know, what did Tina Turner mean from that, Sheila from Detroit says, when I think of the song, I believe she sings of the hurt that she had to endure before she made a conscious decision to escape the abusive relationship, heartbroken like a piece of stick. I believe she felt that she had stayed too long in a relationship that was from the beginning broken. Sheila, thank you so much for your comment. Steve?
Well, it is one of those sort of normalized tragedies that people end up in relationships that are unhealthy. And I think it speaks to the power of that drive for love and acceptance and relationship itself. And we talked a little bit last time about how people have established patterns and habits, and how this relates even at the biological level through epigenetics itself, where the experiences that you go through actually impact the way that your genes express themselves phenotypically in your body. So, you know, there's nature versus nurture, and there's a feedback loop inside of that as well. It's extremely complex, and it just is a powerful way of opening up our understanding to how people can end up in situations where there are tragic and even, you know, unfortunate outcomes. And so in part, we have to understand the dynamics at play. And then once we realize, I mean, it's one thing to question from the outside, but why does this person do that? Why do they stay in this place? Shouldn't they just, you know, leave? There are much more complicated dynamics of dependency and attachment and everything else. It may not be quite that simple, but ultimately we do have this powerful need and desire for love and to experience the love of other people for the purpose of completeness. My viewpoint, Parker, is that that's what we were created for ultimately, to have a loving relationship with God. And so because we are created in His image, that sort of natural purpose and meaning and attraction is something that applies to human relationships also. And so it's just critically important that we are focused and paying attention on how to establish positive kinds of relationships. And so that's why I really appreciate the chance to come on here and speak with you and your audience about love, because we don't treat it with the seriousness and with the proper touch. We need to really understand and not be satisfied just with sort of surface level explanations. We have to do our homework and really come to know and appreciate the depths of the connections that are possible between people, how they should be structured, and what they should provide for us, and what we can provide to others in the process. I mean, human relationships are going to be a big proportion of your life. And if you think about it in percentage terms, you interact with people an awful lot. Everyone does, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. if you're interacting with people, maybe let's say on the low end, maybe 30 minutes or an hour a day, and the rest of the time just on computers and things like that. So even at that low level, that's, let's say, roughly speaking, 5% of your life. And if you live to be 80, we're talking about 4 entire years. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is an extensive amount of time interacting with other people. And so it's important for us to put some thought into it and some time into it to try and understand these things a little bit deeper.
I like how you did that quick math there, because I was going to go whatever you said, Steve, because 2 + 2 is about it for me.
Well, I hope it's right, Parker. I do moonlight as a math and economics tutor, so that's my primary occupation. So hopefully I can have that kind of calculation on board. Somebody will have to fact check us, you know.
Go for it, you know. And then our final comment from our last talk last week was from Joseph from Aurora, Colorado. Joseph says this: the tragic Tina Turner is a poster child for the false peace of Buddhism. Buddhism teaches you to find peace by no longer hoping for anything good, which is like ripping out your stomach so you never get an ulcer. Still, it's hard to blame poor Tina for imagining that a heart is a thing to get rid of when she was treated so badly. Joseph, thank you so much for your comment. And before I let you respond to that, it was very interesting that Joseph made the connection between the false peace of Buddhism with that whole, because she became a Buddhist, you know, from the show We All Are, she became Buddhist from that. And she, quote unquote, was healed or strengthened from that. And it's not often you see people critique Buddhism, because so many people have this connotation that Buddhism is this religion of peace, this religion of, you know, just be kind and, you know, deny your desires, deny yourself and all this other kind of stuff. So it's very interesting that Joseph made that connection. What are your thoughts about that? And I don't want to get too deep into the Buddhism aspect or get to the rest of our talk here, but what is your thought process about that?
I'll try to keep it somewhat contained here. First of all, you know, quick shout out to Joseph out in Aurora, Colorado. My in-laws are out right in that area in Centennial.
Oh, nice.
And that kind of place. So in terms of this notion of Buddhism and the connection between that and our idea of love that we've been developing in this show and in the week previous, Buddhism ultimately seeks to lead people into a place where they are disconnected from themselves. They sort of lose their individuality and disconnect from the world and approach cosmic consciousness. And I'm blending kind of the terminology here between mm-hmm. Buddhism and New Age. And so
yeah.
If I'm doing that, I apologize. The point here is that Buddhism seeks to subsume the individual in the collective in very abstract terms, and as such, removing yourself in a very sort of metaphysically literal way, you're trying to get rid of yourself. And so any extant anxieties or trouble or heartbreak or anything else like that, if you lose touch deliberately with your individuality through the spiritual disciplines of Buddhism, if you're focused on that approach, then you actually remove one of the aspects that defines what we would think of as love as we understand it. So, you know, it's a reciprocal connection between two individuals. And so if there's no individual, if everything is part of, if there's this total oneness in terms of existence, then there's no reciprocality. And so it's this idea of the individual person, the individual self, that's really critical and core to the notion of love. So that's a really important kind of comment and illustrative of the caliber of your audience, Parker, that they're looking at the implications of different worldviews and understanding how these ideas fit together at a big picture level. So, you know, thanks for all those comments, everyone.
And I appreciate everyone just chiming in on discussion. It's a very important discussion, you know. And as we segue to our next part of our discussion, I mean, I love the song, What's Love Got to Do With It? I love the song. I love dancing to it. It's a great song to dance to, you know. And you kind of, every once in a while, you feel a little bit, you know, rebellious or you're upset with something. You kind of go, what's love got to do with it? You know, you kind of have those numbers, you know. Because like we said last week, you know, the term love has been used to manipulate, to oppress, to suppress, and to hurt people in the name of love. I think that's why during the 1960s, when this massive revolution happened, people had seen examples of false love and seeing people that they cared about being hurt. I know, for example, there's a gentleman I know, he grew up in an alcoholic home. His father was an alcoholic. And he said the moment his father's foot hit the doorway, he became a whole different person. People did not believe that he was so cruel because he would act a certain way outside of the home. But like he literally would say, the moment his foot just hit the inside door, he was just this horrible person. He was a drunk and an alcoholic. And even though that gentleman is probably in his early 60s, he still remembers it as if it happened yesterday. He still experiences it. Every time he talks about it, it happened yesterday. You know, he talks about the beatings and the humiliation he suffered from it. And so when he ends up getting married, I believe that led to him never wanting to have children. He never wanted to have children, you know, because of that, because he would never want to impart, quote unquote, that love on anyone else. And so that's why I think it's important that we delve into this topic, because the next part of our topic is our heart can be broken. And we're going to use a movement that's gaining some popularity called Men Go Their Own Way to kind of illustrate what we are talking about when we talk about heart can be broken. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Steve, I want you to expand on what that movement is about, what the implications are about as well. So just stay right there, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity, or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of 1 million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Parker J. Cole Show. I'm so glad you're here with me today. We are talking to my guest, co-host, and contributor today, Stephen Menking. He is from the Amateur Society, and we're talking part two of our discussion about love, basing it off the popular song Tina Turner's What's Love Got to Do with It. Last week, if you missed that show, you can simply go back through our archives at pjcmedia.net and click on a secondhand emotion and get the first part of our discussion. And now we're going to go to the second part of our discussion, which is a heart can be broken. And so in order to illustrate what we're talking about with this subject, we're going to talk about and discuss the movement called Men Go Their Own Way. And when I probed our listenership this week about this, there are people going, what in the world are you talking about, Parker? They had no idea what I was talking about. And there may be listeners listening in who may have that same cluelessness, because I remember when I heard about it, I was shocked, you know. But go ahead and tell us about Men Go Their Own Way and what that movement is all about.
Thanks, Parker. So part of the quick background requires taking a step back in time. And, you know, we can go back a couple decades to the sort of beginning of what people would term third wave feminism. And so this is the latest manifestation of that ideology. And people in many cases have referred to these interest groups and demonstrators and people who are activists, really, in the women's equality movement, and they would position it as such. They're looking for, in many cases, legislative implementation that will sort of force equality of outcome or enforce equality of outcome. And ultimately, it's a tricky sort of ideology, because there are plenty of different videos expounding all of this. If you go to YouTube and type in third wave feminism, there's more content than you'll ever be able to get through looking at that. So I'll point people to those resources to get an understanding of that particular ideology. And so this reactionary ideology, MGTOW, men going their own way, is essentially a group of men who have in many cases experienced hurt or heartbreak or rejection or just a negative experience at the hands of either the court system or in relationships. I mean, I can't psychologize from a distance. That's irresponsible, and so I don't know. But it does seem to be a pattern. At least it's worthy of pointing out, even if it doesn't apply to everyone. Different ideological movements. You can't necessarily pin down one source or the other. But essentially, these are more online-based communities of men, you know, finding fellowship with one another, and you know, they will look at different sorts of content that describes these different ideologies and share their experiences. But basically, they say that they're not interested in romantic relationship. They're sort of they're going their own way, so to speak. And so, you know, there are all sorts of different additional intricacies to it. But that's a basic rundown. It's a reaction to the more radical spectrum of the third wave feminism movement. And, you know, there's a bit of conflict there and things that are nascent under the surface, but ultimately it's interesting for people to understand that these kind of dynamics are happening in our society, that some of the division that we see is even being applied and sort of trickling down to not just gender roles and responsibilities, but to the desire and the structure of relationships themselves. Ideas matter is what I'm trying to say.
And they really do. In the war of ideas, these things actually do matter. And I'm pretty sure that the women back in the early 1800s or the early 1900s who was fighting for women's rights really didn't see this as being something that will eventually happen. I'm pretty sure they didn't, because they were fighting for equality, which they should have. They definitely should have. I remember Vishal Mangalwadi, he was on the Bible Answer Man some years ago. He talked about why did they even have a women's movement? Why hasn't a women's movement been as prominent in the Middle East, where women have been completely suppressed, than it has been in the West, where women have risen up above, quote unquote, that suppression? And he said there's ideas that evolved behind that make women want to fight for equality, as opposed to women who don't even think they have to fight for it. And so that's another subject, kind of tangent, but it's tangent to what we're talking about, because we're seeing this third wave of feminism, especially kind of the more virulent kind. We're not talking about women getting equal pay. We're not talking about women being respected and being equal. We're not talking about abuse. We're talking about when we try to elevate one gender over another instead of seeing the equality in both while recognizing there are some differences. And so it's a really multifaceted topic that we could really break down. It'll take several shows, probably a year even, to go through it if we just don't have time for that. But it's very interesting as we continue our discussion, because with this movement, Men Go Their Own Way, men are saying basically in a way it's a slap to God's face, the woman you made for me, I don't need. You know, and so when Adam saw Eve, when God created Adam, and then God created Eve from Adam's rib, and he saw her, he was happy. And finally, he looked at someone who was like him, but not as well as like him, who was different from him, and he became one with her. And so when we have this type of thing, there was a risk that was involved when Adam took Eve as his wife. There was a risk involved with that. And the risk was that he probably didn't know it then, but that a heart could be broken. And with this trend of like men go their own way and hyperfeminism, where women try to just completely dog men down, and then the men's movement, everything, a heart can be broken. And some people are definitely afraid of that because their hearts have been broken. So with what I'm saying making sense, Steve, can you expand on what we're talking about here when we talk about the risk that is involved with loving?
Well, let me try and bridge one of these gaps here, Parker, just because I think there's a really important connection that can be made, and that is you mentioned that these various movements were looking in a different direction than the biblical model, and I would say that that's extremely important, because all of this is downstream from a general shift away from Christianity and from traditional biblical values in the culture. And so this kind of thing has been permeating for quite some time. And when we are ultimately focused on identity politics and our group identity rather than focusing on individuals and relationships and all of that, then things can get, unfortunately, put into various boxes just from a sort of external categorization. And so that ultimately ends up with more like in-group, out-group divisiveness, which is one of the very things that we're trying to avoid here, because it's dangerous for the functioning of society, in that we need to be able to talk to each other and we need to be able to speak with each other. And ultimately, that sort of isolation inside of different groups and things like that can ultimately create a lack of love, particularly for people who aren't who don't fall into the same categorizations as yourself. But you know, like I said, our misunderstanding of love is ultimately, in my view, rooted in our misunderstanding of God and of making a decision as a culture to pursue secular humanism and to eschew the things of God in our nation.
Thank you for bringing that all together, Steve. There's so much to the topic, and sometimes my brain just goes all over the place as many ideas kind of merge on me and things of that nature. One thing, too, I was thinking sometimes when we talk about a heart can be broken, I remember I actually experienced this physical sensation of my heart being broken. I actually had a mental health professional help me. But when it happened, it wasn't any romantic relationship. It was a friendship that I had lost. And the friendship broke apart. And I remember having a physical ache. That is the only way to describe it. I couldn't talk. My throat closed up. I had a hard time breathing. And I just had this huge emotional trauma, and I couldn't understand what was, quote unquote, sick. And when you mentioned earlier in the broadcast that scientists are discovering that there's like a brain in the heart with these neurons that have all this, I could totally really resonate with that. And I remember talking about it with a mental health professional on my Facebook one time, and he said, it sounds like you experience emotional trauma. And I said, really? He said, it really sounds as if you have a broken heart. And I remember it took me a long while to get over it because the hurt was so deep. But naturally, I thought a broken heart was just a, you know, descriptive manifestation of a feeling, but it was actually a physical thing. And it lets you know that these events that hurt us, that harm us, they do have a physical toll on our bodies. But at the same time, when we have a loving relationship with someone we love, it affects our bodies in a good way, too. For example, we're going to keep it just to heterosexual couples right now. For example, when men marry, when women marry, they live longer, they have happier lives, they have, they know their, what they call it, their interpersonal communication skills get better, especially because of the women who talk and chit-chat and all that kind of stuff. And all these things that marriage does for each member of that relationship, the man and female. Go ahead, and if I'm saying it wrong, see, go ahead and correct me on how it affects how love, a long-term romantic relationship, particularly marriage, is good for our society.
Yeah, and there's a lot to touch on there also. I think it's really important for us to understand from the perspective of heartbreak and that it's a physical, it's a biological sensation, and we can actually read about this in the Bible itself in Proverbs 17. Proverbs 17, verse 22 reads, "A merry heart doth good like a medicine," or does good like a medicine, "but a broken spirit dries the bones." And so this is a translation that is applying to the heart and to the body and the spirit and the body. So it's this connection. And so when you experience things at an emotional level that are significant, it has an impact on your body itself. And that's because your mind and your body are connected, and there are all sorts of different neurological systems that need to be like properly regulated and kept in balance. And when they get thrown out of balance, the body releases different hormones that change the behavior of your organ systems. And the heart is one of the key systems there. And so the Bible is saying that, you know, a cheerful countenance, a merry heart, you know, thinking on the good things actually does physical. It helps your body in a physical way. And so the opposite would be true of heartbreak. And so I think that the part of the connection in terms of thinking about the longer term relationships and why stable family constructs like marriage are absolutely necessary for society, we have to think about a couple of things. And that is that there's a large percentage of families that don't follow that structure, and a lot of that does have to do with instances of heartbreak and people sort of having and citing unreconcilable differences, shall I say, and mm-hmm. that can leave these kind of deep-seated scars and wounds and this physical impact as well. And so that's very challenging to deal with, and hence you have a lot of brokenness an awful lot of brokenness in so many families. If we think about our family and our family has everything put together, then thank God for it. But you know someone whose family is not put together or is experiencing tragedy or pain or loss or difficulty or heartache. And so ultimately, these relationships, if they remain stable, are the primary mechanism of passing on values and ultimately the good points of culture itself. You don't want to, in like the parent to child connection mechanism is supposed to be a loving bond that, amongst other things, can facilitate the transmission of values and ideas and moral standards and the best of humanity. Now, that's in an idealized situation, but that is the proper structure. And if we are to try and understand something more about our own lives, we have to understand more about this proper design and where we can the structures under which we can get the most meaning and sort of cultural stability. It doesn't mean that you pass on all the bad parts of your culture, because things need to be cleaned up and changed and modified and adjusted. And so that familial transmission mechanism, modeled at the top by a powerful, loving relationship between husband and wife, father and mother, that's a critical structure for society. And when it breaks down throughout the course of history, the results are never good within a handful of generations.
It's fascinating for you to say some of what you just said. I was recently doing some research for a book I'm writing, and I had to go to 1860. It was a book about gentleman etiquette from the 1860s. Fascinating read, because some of the truths were quite timeless. And one of the things that you mentioned was the fact that the man, even though they had more of a patriarchal view, that the man, because he is the lord and master of his house, he has the obligation to present love to his wife, to his parents, and to his children. And there is a huge note about that in this book of etiquette, about courtesy. It even talked about family courtesy. You have to extend courtesy to your children. You have to extend courtesy to your wife, extend courtesy to your mother and your father who care for you. And so you have to extend that to them. And I was reading, I was like, wow, some of this stuff is just absolutely timeless. And then here that you say that, you know, kind of repeating the same thing that someone repeated back in 1860. I just find that just fascinating, because these truths are timeless, because God is timeless. And the incommunicable properties that he puts in us, such as that need for love and need for connection, remain true. And I love the way you expanded on that. And we do have a couple of comments that I want to read. As we were probing our audience this week, I asked our audience, I said, why do you think more men and women are shying away from long-term relationships? And long-term relationships, we know, ultimately mean marriage. For me, that means marriage. I don't know what it means for our listeners out there. For me, it means marriage. Eventually, I marry this person after 2 months or a year. Why are more women shying from that? And so we did a couple of responses. But the interesting one, I'm just going to read a couple of these. Jessica Winchester in Atlanta says, I've spoken to more men who have this choice than women. Most of the time, what they have mentioned is a belief that modern women are too dangerous to be around. If there is domestic abuse against the men, they will not be believed. If there is a divorce, they would generally come out worse, and so on. Depending on where one is at, the law can certainly be unfair favor and problems. They feel that they get what they need from other sources rather than taking on the risk of a woman who could then have sufficient power to ruin them. Jessica, thank you so much for your input. What do you think about that, Steve?
Well, she's done an excellent job of describing one of the primary lines of reasoning and experiential understanding that's expressed by the men going their own way movement. Oftentimes, it is in relation to the prospect of the court system and different kinds of circumstances, and maybe people have been through it themselves or cautioning others to avoid what they've been through. And ultimately, what you can see sort of in the background from a worldview perspective is that it's that ultimately those calculations are being made at a utilitarian, like sort of a secular pragmatist level, and there's nothing wrong with pragmatism generally speaking. So if we're understanding relationships as being means to an end, then it's going to be easier for us to look at those scenarios and say, well, you know, what if this turns around and I end up badly out of this as a deal? It's like fair. Like, why wouldn't you consider that? It's actually really intelligent to consider that. And so it means that you should be careful if you're selecting someone or if you're hoping to settle down for a long term period. I mean, if you're going to spend 30, 40, 50 years with someone and not grow resentful or bitter, then you better have a pretty good understanding of who they are. But even if you attempt to do that, you can never sort of wrap your mind around not just who someone is, but who they can and will become. And so that's a challenge. And so for Christians, marriage is treated as a covenant, where it is established on the word and the will of God, and that you need that kind of unshakable foundation as a place of refuge, as a place of strength, as a place of spiritual nourishment, because it takes a great deal of work and purposeful decision making to maintain and to cultivate proper relationships. And it's very challenging, because people have very busy lives. They have bills to pay. They have obligations in many different areas. And so ultimately it's a challenge. And we see unfortunate heartbreaks and tragic circumstances coming out of relationships. And then ultimately you get this sort of feeling in society that love is cheapened. That love is something that isn't really to be pursued, and that the old romantic attention on it, and I mean romantic with a capital R here in terms of the period, that is sort of cliche and trite and overly saccharine in its connotation. And I think there are much more sort of far-reaching and insightful perspectives on love. We just have to know to go where their portrayals are. And so, Parker, do I have a couple minutes before the break, or should we read something on the other side? I want to talk about some passages that describe love from 1 Corinthians. All right, great. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13. This is an epistle of Paul. He's writing a letter to the church in Corinth. And he is, at this point, discussing the hierarchy of important sort of modes of being from a spiritual perspective. It says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I've become a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, does not provoke, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will fail. Where there are tongues, they will cease. Where there is knowledge, it will vanish away. For we know in part and we prophesy in part, but when that which is perfect has come, then that which is in part will be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know just as I am known. And now abide faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. That's 1 Corinthians 13 talking about, Paul is writing about the nature of love and the primacy of love, and it harkens back to Jesus' own words describing the primary commandments, the greatest foundation of the law, to love your God with all your heart, with all your strength, and with all your spirit, and then to love others as you love yourself. So those... It's impossible to overstate the role of love. I know there are so many different things that we could get into there, but I just wanted to get that out there, because I think it's a powerful expression of the importance of love, and is really just such a tender treatment with so much insight about the structure of love, the nature of love, and how it should be manifest in our own relationships and in our own lives, both with God and with other people.
And then, you know, God's word always comes back with so much depth when we ask these questions like, what's love got to do with it? And we can unequivocally say every single thing. Love has a single thing to do with it. That God's love is so beyond comprehension that when we have broken his heart, he still loves us. And I think as we continue our topic about a heart can be broken, we have to remember that. And that's why I'm so glad you read that scripture. I remember when I think I must have been like 9 or something, and I read that scripture for like the first time, having my eyes open. And I remember crying really hard, like, wow, I want to be able to love like this. I don't know if I ever will be. And I was like 9, something like really young when I discovered that. And over the years, as you interact with people, you meet people you love, you fall out of love, and what I mean by fall out of love is, you know, puppy love, stuff like that, you know, and you fall in and out of that, you know, you realize that love has everything to do with it, that because you love someone, like you love your spouse, you're willing to make sacrifices for them. Because you love your children, you're willing to make sacrifices for them. Or some of those sacrifices aren't necessarily, I have to give up something, but I have to do something. I know for one instance, one of my girlfriends, she ended up getting pregnant. She had a baby. And she said if it wasn't for him, you know, her son, she wouldn't have gone back to school. She wouldn't have gotten a stable job. She wouldn't have done a lot of different things, you know. And because her love from him, she said, I have to get together because I have to take care of you because I love you so much. Where before she was kind of floundering a bit and stuff like that, didn't really have any real focus. And then she had this baby, and now he gave her focus, you know. And so that's what love does. So what's love got to do with it? It has to do with everything. And even though a heart can be broken, the joy that we receive from loving each other and loving one another is beyond compare. What we're going to do is take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to read just one more comment and get some final thoughts from Stephen Minkin from the Amateur Society. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and Facebook chat. Promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
Let's get cooking. Yeti Cooks is a place where you will find recipe ideas, tutorials, and tips, clean eating, classic favorites, meal plans, nutrition information, and a lot more. You can find instructional videos or download recipes found on yeticooks.com. Follow my cooking chronicles on Instagram and Twitter. Get quarterly newsletters, latest updates on trending food culture at yeticooks.com. Let's get cooking.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to the Parker J. Cole Show. We've been having just an insightful conversation about love using Tina Turner's song, What's Love Got to Do With It? Last week, we talked about it being, or whether or not it is, a secondhand emotion. This week, we're talking about a heart can be broken, that because a heart can be broken, some people choose to shy away from it. And there are many different reasons why they do that. Particularly, we're talking about this third wave of feminism, which is manifested in the movement Men Go Their Own Way, where men are avoiding long-term romantic relationships in order to protect themselves or to not have a broken heart or just because they're selfish, who knows? But there's many reasons why these movements are out there, why people are avoiding long-term relationships. And so we want to talk about, yes, there's a reality of a heart can be broken, but even more greater is the fact that love has everything to do with it. And before the break, Steve read from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, which is known as the love chapter. And he talks about how love has so many facets to it and so many depths and so much depth to it that we can't possibly comprehend the complexity of love. And so, Steve, once again, thank you for being with us on the show. I wanted to read one more comment we received. We got a comment from Donovan in Wixom, Michigan. Donovan, thank you so much for your comment. Donovan says, I was reading this, and he cites an article about the foundation of marriage, the two gender roles. I was reading this today on marriage roles. I honestly think many simply are just removing away from God's design for marriage. Men seem to no longer be able or willing to love a woman sacrificially, only seeing her for what they can get and not give. And women are unwilling to submit to a spouse. We are only looking to satisfy needs and not surrender anything in a relationship anymore. Just self-centered, if you ask me, just my two cents. Donovan, thank you so much for your comment. I think it's more than just two cents, wouldn't you say, Stephen?
Yeah, I would definitely agree that we're talking about some important key dynamics from the perspective of people being self-focused and that removing a significant plank of our own understanding of the roles that men and women are not just supposed to play, but designed to play. It's not that we are forced into obeying or to fit some particular pattern just on wit and whim. It is the pattern of a loving relationship that is designed and proffered by God for the sake of human flourishing. And to be quite honest with you, Parker, it's really pivotal. Like, you need someone around you who knows you in mm-hmm. ways that you don't know yourself and is capable of picking up on subtle cues to help keep you on track, and that's a role that both men and women have to play for one another. It is two becoming one in the Bible sense. And in that, from that perspective, if that really sacred trust and classification and the power of that bond is betrayed or destroyed, it really can lead to intense levels of bitterness and loneliness and these different really powerful, tragic emotions that can even leave a physical toll on our well-being. And, you know, particularly here as we're close to Valentine's Day, it's a time when people relive heartbreak, and there's intense emotional kind of connection and connotation to it, and it's a difficult time for some, even as it's a celebratory time for others. And so it's really important for us to think on these things, and for us ultimately to understand what our worldview would say about them, because if we're not thinking through things from that level, we're going to be missing something in a way in which many different signs that have these scriptures from 1 Corinthians, the love is long-suffering and kind, all the characteristics of love, you see that on a lot of sort of plaques and bumper stickers and everything like that. But we need to really we need to make a conscious decision to press into that, to really understand what's being talked about and where our model for love should come from. And ultimately, for Christians, it should come from Christ and from God, and to use that pattern. Husbands are supposed to love their wives like Christ loved the church. And so it is this self-sacrificial love, but in order to do that, we really have to understand the importance of this kind of marriage structure, just because otherwise we're going to end up treating it more lightly than we should, and that's unfortunately more and more the case in this generation. But I believe God for revival. I believe God for strengthening, and I know that God can show us the paradigm that we are supposed to establish, and it's the paradigm that God has designed for us that is the most healthy and redeeming and righteous kind of approach. If you're seeking God's will for your life, it will touch all of the different things in this area, just because it's such an important component to human existence, Parker.
I can't help but think, as we get ready to close this fascinating two-part discussion about love, I can't help but think of the movie Fireproof, and how toward the end of the movie, if you haven't seen it, sorry, I'm giving you spoilers, but if you haven't seen it, he says to his wife, God has given me a love for you that I never had before. And if you have experienced God reviving your heart, so if your marriage has made you through some time, you are in a situation you don't know if I can ever love this person again. If you're in a part where your heart has been broken because you've been hurt, God can revive your heart, give you a heart that can pulse anew with great love for one another. And Steve, I want people to contact you and be able to get in touch with you if they want to talk to you. Go ahead and let us know where you are.
Sure. Thanks for the opportunity, Parker. And in general, it's always a pleasure and a privilege to be here with you. It's great to talk about these sorts of things and engage with your wonderful audience. If people want to reach out to me, the website for the Amateur Society is amateursociety.wordpress.com. We run weekly discussion groups and open call via Skype on Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, talking about all sorts of different topics in technology, politics, finance, economics, philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. It's a smattering of all different kinds of material. And then that's part of the On the Objective podcast network. That's ontheobjective.org. The YouTube and the Twitter there are On the Objective. So that's another good place to get in touch with me.
Thank you so much for being with us on the show today. I don't take it lightly, but I'm so glad you're here, and I can't wait to have you back real soon.
I appreciate that, Parker. It's always an awesome time to hang out with you and with your audience and talk about these things. So thanks again for having me on. God bless you. I really appreciate it.
And we were talking today to Steve Mankiw. He is from the Amateur Society. If you want to find him online, certainly can by going to amateursociety.wordpress.com. Make sure you join Skype calls that are on Monday, 8th, open discussions. You can simply question and join in the conversation. Thank you so much for joining for this edition of the Parker J. Cole Show. We talked about love, and love is truly the best thing that ever happened to us, because without love, we would not be here today, because God loved us so much that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. Thank you so much for joining for this edition of the show. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day. And God bless.